You are listening to Something Rather Than Nothing. Creator and host, Ken Vellante. Editor and producer, Peter Bauer.
This is Ken Vellante with the Something Rather Than Nothing podcast, and I'm very excited to have Larissa Birdseye, artist, musical artist, and she's based in Portland. I've really enjoyed her music. She's got some new music that was just released. Larissa, welcome to Something Rather Than Nothing.
Hi, Ken. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, it's a great pleasure. And on the show, we'd like to feature a lot of artists in the Pacific Northwest and in Portland. And so I'm very pleased to have you. The first question is that I ask each guest is, were you an artist when you were born?
I think that's really interesting. I think everyone is an artist when they're born, and I think it either gets stamped out of you or it gets encouraged. So I would say, even though it sounds a little kind of douchey, but I do think I was an artist when I was born. I was always kind of writing poems and writing songs and writing short stories and painting and drawing little characters and like cutting them out. And I don't know, I like to create little worlds around me as a kid. And I think a lot of kids are like that. We're just these like amazing, unencumbered, not self-conscious creators. And I think that we live in a world that is structured in a way that is not always like very encouraging to creativity unless it makes us lots of money. So I'm just crazy. I'm just crazy and I'm just doing this thing.
Yeah. So, you know, that comes up a lot, Larissa. I mean, I think, you know, there's the kind of thing where people like, oh, the marketplace encourages all art to make and, you know, people to make art, and other people's like it, you know, it stamps it out. So you mentioned like that does happen to artists where it's like you're doing your wild things that you enjoyed doing. Was there a period where you started to like double think that, or do you feel like you've had a thread of being like, hey, this is what I want to do and here's how I'm doing it? Have you been able to hold that for yourself?
So I actually was very, very not excited, or I just didn't think it was possible to be an artist. We have all of these stories like Van Gogh and, you know, all of these people that ended up penniless and impoverished and, had miserable lives. And I think it's this major deterrent to pursuing art. And so when I was in high school, like I loved theater, I loved music, I loved a lot of really artistic things. And I also at the same time was like, that's not a possibility. Like, that's not a smart thing. That's not like the thing that I could do, and I've got to do something else. And so I spent a lot of years, like I went to school, I worked in different industries. I tried to be like a real adult. And I just like never, it just always felt sort of miserable. It felt like I was like denying this part of myself that I would always come back to, you know, like music was such a big thing for me. And it was kind of like a little quiet escalation of what it was. Like I never thought that I would be a musician. Actually, I never felt like I was a good musician. I never felt like I loved to write songs, and I had a guitar, and I would sit and I would write songs with a guitar, and I would never play them for anyone unless I was super drunk. And then little by little, people around me were like, you know, you're actually like pretty good at this and you should maybe do something with this. And of course I was like terrified, but little by little over time, it took me until I was 25 to really realize like, okay, well, I'm unhappy with what I'm doing in my life, and that sucks, you know, like that's not an ideal situation. Yeah, it took me until I was 25 to really get the courage to kind of shift into something else. And I quit my corporate job, and it was a really good job, and there was a lot of like, there was so much fear. I was like, am I ruining my life? Like, what am I doing? But I just haven't really looked back.
That's that's, well, you know, the piece that was nagging inside of you, and you know, and hearing your music and hearing your art, I'm happy for you in the sense of not, you know, just meeting you, but happy for you to be able to be like, okay, this is where I'm going to go. Like, this is what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And as an artist, but another conceptual question before we dig into a little bit more of your music. What is art? Like, you're an artist and you decide to be an artist and you're recording and, but what is art?
God, it's like, that's a really big question. But also I think like a really simple question. I think art is just the act of creating anything from something like that didn't exist or something immaterial, you know, like something that wasn't, maybe just comes from you. Like art can be just, you're with your friends around a campfire and someone sings a line, someone sings a riff and you harmonize over that. That's art. That's something that didn't like necessarily exist before. It's something, I mean, maybe it did, but those notes have been sung before, of course, but like you haven't right. sung that with this person in this place and you're creating something that like wasn't there and it's nice and it feels good and it feels wonderful to do it. You know, there's physical art. You can do shit with all sorts of different things. But I think it's just the act of creating something that didn't exist before. I mean, art can be like buildings, you know, like architecture is definitely art.
Yeah.
That's why I think we're all artists, you know, like we kind of assign this title of artist to the people that are like really doing it or like trying to make a living out of it. But I think we're all very artistic. I mean, you walk into a house and it's there's art everywhere. The way that something is designed is we're all creating art all of the time.
Yeah. And it's I think a lot of times in the conversation I had has to do with like noticing that there's been this intention with the piece or like how we do populate our homes where we don't say, look at all the art that's in my home. But when you walk in and look around and see the paintings or see this or see an object, you're like, this is very artistic, right? But we don't think about it as deliberately. As I mentioned at the beginning, Larissa, I really enjoy your music. And I don't want to, like, when I have a musical guest and I have a song that I mention, I don't like to let them, like, the audience, like, oh, what is this song? What is this song? So I want to play the song. But could you just talk about, just mention the track, Shame. I know it was recently released, but anything you want to say about it before we plunge into it?
Yeah, I wrote Shame in my car on the way back from Bend in the car. My little brother lives in Bend, and so I'd spent the holidays with him because it was COVID, and I could only hang out with my little brother because he's young, and we figured if we got each other sick, we probably wouldn't die. that was the year that we all had. But I'd gotten a text from a mutual friend of someone that I no longer talk to. And it was like I hadn't spoken to this person and it was a very intentional break. Like I couldn't handle it anymore. It was just very toxic and unhealthy for me. I didn't want to hear anything about this person. And I got a text that was something about him. And I just was like, I just spiraled. I was like, ugh, like, fuck this guy. And then I was just so sad because I realized it wasn't like a fuck this person. It was like, fuck, it's like such a shame that we'll just never be close or be friends ever again. And so it's a very bitter, there's a lot of pain. There's a lot of anger. There's a lot of bitterness. There's a lot of pain. But also, like, I really think that every single one of my songs is just a love song. I'm just not very good at communicating that I love you. Usually it's like, fuck you, you know? Like, I'm a very proud, like, you know.
But all my songs,
even when they're like, I literally hope you die, they're all love songs. It's just how I can say I love you.
They're all love songs, but based on how you're able to communicate your love. That is great.
I'm like, well, you fucked me over, so I obviously don't love you. But like, the syntax is like, oh, no, I do. I definitely do. The subtext, yeah.
I love it. Everybody, we are cutting to Larissa Birdseye track, Shame.
I'm so fucking tired of the ways in which I feel so thrown away. I cannot say the things you say, I mean it. Or should should I say? You said, 'cause boy, I treat you like you're dead. You cut a hole inside my head and I can't stop the bleeding. You can make or break me. Look at what you made me. What if I followed you all of the way down? Guess I was mistaken. Couple more years wasted. All that's left to say is what a fucking
congrats on that track. It's a great track, and it's a fresh release. I've really enjoyed your music. You mentioned you got some an acoustic EP. I was wondering if you mentioned a little bit about that. I said I hadn't even encountered your acoustic stuff. What about that?
Yeah. So I started out as an acoustic sort of singer songwriter, folkier kind of artist, mostly out of necessity. I could play acoustic guitar and I didn't know any players, and so I would hit open mics around town and just play by myself. And so it was like a very very minimalist sort of thing. And as time has gone on, I've obviously gotten a lot more into more produced pop tracks, which I love. I like, it's funny because Portland, Oregon is like not a pop music town, but and when I was little, I think I was always like closet loved pop music, like absolutely. But you couldn't really do that. You were like, you had to be a little bit of a hipster, and you're like, no, like I don't listen to that. I only listen to Jeff Buckley. Like, but you know, I was bumping all the old shit. So now I'm doing that more, but I do also still love to strip it down to what, you know, the song really at its essence is, especially if it's, more kind of like lyric driven. And so I was able to record a couple songs at the Hallowed Halls recently, and I did an acoustic recording of one of my last singles I put out in May called Porcelain. And I did that with James Villa, who also produced the track, and a cello player named Yoko, who's amazing. I can't remember their last name, but and then a girl named Rain Ezra sang backup vocals, and so it's just like a beautiful rendition. But my favorite song off of that project is a song called Barely Friends, and I had just written the song a couple of days before, and it was one of these things where the song wasn't necessarily ready. I just recently started playing piano in the last year, so I'm not like a terrific piano. I'm a competent piano player at this point. So I played keys, Rain sang backup, and I just delivered like a very honest performance, and I think it turned out really beautifully, and it's one of my favorite things I've done to date, honestly.
That's great. And for listeners, we'll have Barely Friends at the end of the episode. Larissa, I want to go back. You know, you're talking about what art is. I have a question that's connected to that for artists, and is, what do you think the role of art is? What does art do for us?
Ooh, I can only say what it does for me. It sort of gives me a reason to keep doing things. Like, I don't know. I love being able to create. It's really meditative for me. It really calms me down. I think it's sort of the glue that binds us all together, you know, and when you go to a new city, like you want to go to an art museum or you want to see a show or you want to read something that is by someone that, I don't know, like someone's recommended you something that changes your life. Like I love reading also. Like I was an English major before I dropped out of college to be a musician. But I think the purpose of art is just to kind of make you feel less alone in what you're going through, kind of remind you that the human experience that you have individually is not just your own. Like, we share all of these experiences and we might live them out in different ways, but really we are bound by some pretty basic emotions and basic experiences. It's you know, love, it's loss, it's grief, it's anger, it's betrayal, it's all of these things that like can completely fucking bust us to pieces. And I think the role of the artist is to take their own pain and transmute it into something that is like, hey, you guys, like, this is mine. And I think people that aren't necessarily able to create that, like when I was going through a major kind of upheaval in my life a few years ago, and I was writing a lot. I was just like really writing my way through it. I talked to a lot of people, and they, you know, what do they do when they go through something shitty? They drink, you know, a lot of people drink, or, you know, they do other things, but they don't write a million songs about it. And I think that's what artists do. So when someone is going through some really horrible shit, they can listen to a song and connect to it. And I mean, I've done that with other artists too, where, you know, I listen to a song, I hear it, and I'm like, you've written my experience. And I'm so grateful for that, because it definitely makes me feel less alone or like less alienated. And it's really beautiful. It's super powerful to have that connecting, that binding thing. It's pretty great. I think art is the only thing that makes life worth living, honestly. It's like this little glimmer in like a world that we've created that can be really oppressive and constraining. But yeah. Yeah.
No, I really appreciate your words. I mean, you know, just like the realness, I don't know what other, you know, word of like of the experience in trying to convey that to others. One of the things I find with music is, and I appreciate you saying that about pop, because like even on the show, I think a lot of times I find in talking to others where they've kind of limited like what music they allow themselves to listen to, or there's so much like identity that's created around liking something that they don't want that identity, like they don't want to purchase that identity. So like an example for me is like I adore Taylor Swift. I think she's like, I can go on and on, but I adore the music, I adore how it's produced and the pop aspects of it, and you know, so I listen to a ton of that, but
yeah,
when I go to live shows, I go to doom metal shows, because that type of intensity and that type of community is the most powerful For me. So for myself, I like that I'm like, okay, moving from this to that. But I have conversations with others, and I think a lot of times they still kind of like want to enjoy certain things, or they want to indulge in, you know, Larissa's song or like this pop song, but they're like, ew, that's kind of, you know? And I always find that so curious, you know, like it's almost like the openness, you know, to experience our other's art.
Yeah, I find that as I get older, I care a lot less about that. Like, I just don't, because I love Taylor Swift too. And I think I was like a little baby hipster when I was younger. Like, I feel like my dad was like the original hipster. He was born in like 1939. And he was just like, I don't know. He just imbued it in me of like, no, this is for the normals. We don't enjoy this. but I mean, like, I grew up listening to like Britney Spears and like Mariah Carey and Destiny's Child and Beyonce, like all of that. And it wasn't, you know, and it's funny because looking back now at the early 2000s of like what R&B was, like that was such a classic era. Like all, I was in some restaurant the other night, and like all of these like early 2000 R&B duets came on, and I remember they were like all on the radio at the time, and I think that a lot of my friend group, we were very like not into liking what was on the radio, even though we secretly loved it. but now like they're just the absolute cuts, like they're so good, and it's just like, okay, well, you know what, why don't we just like enjoy what we enjoy, you know, like that's kind of where I'm at right now.
Yeah.
Even if it's garbage. Like even if it's if something is like super sad, like super, you know, bubbly and whatever, like there are still elements of it that are enjoyable. I don't know. It's again like we all have a tendency to be like art snobs. Like everyone wants to be a critic. And sometimes like just enjoy it. You know, everything is its different thing. Like there's gonna be things that you like because of the artistry of it. Like I really love Phoebe Bridgers right now. I don't know if you're familiar with her as an artist.
Yeah, I love her.
I think she's like, as far as lyricist goes, like I listen to her lyrics and I'm like, oh my God, what did you fucking do here? What did you do? Like, genius bitch. And that's not necessarily how I write or how I construct. Like, I feel like her lyrics are more like, it's almost like prose. Like, it's like poetry. In the way that she fits shit together. And I really appreciate that. I really like that about her. It's definitely not how I write. I tend to be like more blunt to the point. Because when I first started writing, I thought the more like convoluted or maybe like the more interesting or kind of hidden you could make things would be a better song. And I realized, so I was like, okay, well, this is just like confusing and bullshit and not executed particularly well. So I realized like what works for me was just to be completely like punchy, honest. And there's like a cleverness in that, which I'm like, you know, we're just all doing different things.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I like the thinking about how you speak about it. Sometimes it is just like the reality or the blunt truth of it. And it's your way of expressing. And I wanted to ask another question, Larissa, and it's a bigger conceptual one, but it has to do, you know, just about you and what's influenced you. And the question is this, is what or who made you who you are?
Like musician wise or like, in like just people wise?
People-wise, you, Larissa Birdseye, person.
Well, I definitely think my family has been a giant influence on who I am, in very positive ways and in very interesting ways. I have a very interesting family, a cast of characters, and like my dad is a retired English professor and like. Grew up in the Bronx in the 30s and just like super, super highly educated, like got his PhD from Columbia. Like my mom is just like an absolute badass. She's a doctor. Like she's just like a very strong woman. Like I was raised to believe that like I could really do anything that I wanted, like not in like a shitty, like the world is for me kind of way, but like right. in a way that you're not limited or you're not limited by, you know, being a girl, like you're, you know, you're smart and you're capable and you're talented and like, go do it. So I think my parents were a big influence on that. I think I was like, I had a lot of growing pains when I was younger. I went through a lot of shit in high school. I had a pretty bad eating disorder that kind of spun me out super early. So I was like 13 going through this really intense kind of secret unraveling as like a child, you know? So I yeah. think I was going through a big nightmare super, super early on. So like most of what I was focused on was just like survival at a time when kids were like, oh, like, where am I going to school? And like, what do I want for my yeah. life? And I was like, I don't know if I'm going to like survive to 17 kind of thing.
I so want to make sure I get to tomorrow. Yeah.
I mean, honestly, at that point, it was more like I was so held captive by the eating disorder. Like it was just a very intense. I'm very appreciative for what I know. I think everything that you go through, like every experience, especially when it's something with your brain, when it's some compulsion, whether it's addiction or you know, some sort of debilitating like eating disorder, it kind of carves into you this, you don't necessarily need to understand what it's like to kind of lose your mind a bit. But I think if you can know that and be able to come back on the other side and kind of like regain your shit, I think it has given me like a lot of insight, into like all of the nuances of what it is to be human. Like it was just like a weird time. And I also think it gave me less of like an interest in doing what everyone else was doing. Like I kind of fucked that up early. Like I was like, well, I'm not doing what you're doing because I can't eat. So I think as I got older, when I really decided, when I was like, okay, well, I want to do what makes me happy. And following that has been like a really great time, you know?
Yeah. I've been very close in my life, very close, to individuals who've worked, you know, through, you know, eating disorders. And I myself haven't consumed alcohol since September 9th, 2009.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Thank you. And, you know, so yeah, you know, on that. And one of the things it seems like almost sometimes like there's a chance aspect to it. Cause like people ask me about like sobriety and I'm like, I'm not giving up my sobriety date because it's 999.
That's perfect.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to drink, you know, it's obviously I shouldn't drink for other reasons, but I'm not going to drink cause I got the coolest sobriety date ever and I'm not giving it up.
Yeah, no, that's incredible. Yeah. I myself am at 80 days of not drinking and this is, before the pandemic kind of fucked the world, I had had 14 months of sobriety and then everything kind of fell apart and I was like, oh, I'm all alone. So that's amazing that you were able to get through that year. I was so early in my sobriety and I think I did it in a way that was very like constricting. So now I'm a little more like, I don't know. I'm learning that being sober does not mean that I can isolate from everyone, which is what I was doing the first year of sobriety.
Yeah,
like sure. I'm always in bars. I'm always in venues. I'm traveling around in like high stress situations, but I've always been able to kind of like remove myself at the end, and get away from everyone. But I've been trying to like force myself to maybe not force myself, but like become more comfortable with this idea that I can sit with my anxiety or I can kind of like work with that. And then instead of fearing the feeling of anxiety and like retreating to, you know, like my home or like my, you know, my bedroom, just to kind of completely get away from everyone. You know, I'm just,
yeah, Well, it sounds like, you know, I know sometimes with the you know, moving into sobriety, it's almost like there's like a certain need of room to breathe, right? Because I know, like, even for myself, it was like, how do you navigate life, number one? Like, you know, how do you have fun in these settings that I always used to be at? How can I have fun anymore? Then you can't do the settings. And so there's a lot to navigate about, like, how you see yourself and how you define yourself. But, best of luck, you know, each day, Larissa. I mean, you know, as a person, me to you, you know, good for you. We're going to jump from that to like a question that I think most guests think is inherently unfair and too big. But the question is, why is there something rather than nothing?
Why is there something rather than nothing? It reminds me of that song, the nothing from nothing comes nothing. I don't know. Something rather than nothing. Oh, you're a bastard.
Yes, I knew it.
I mean, I guess we could relate this back to art. I feel like a pageant queen. I feel like a very stumped pageant queen right now. I mean, because there can never be nothing. Everything is creation. Everything, you know, like, that's what we do. We can't really, like, live in nothing. We're always gonna make some other shit, you know?
Yeah.
That's what we do. We create.
Yeah. No, I, it was one of the things that I hear a lot when I ask, you know, a different question earlier on has to do with, like, you know, making things. And a lot of times, like, the language people use, I heard it from you a bit too, is like, when you've created something and it's like through here, like, have you like reconfigured like existing things? Or is it like, you know, like, this is my new thing and it's from Larissa, it's from Ken, and here it is out into the world. So it's always like, it feels to me like how you made the thing, you know, and that, whether that came from nothing or came truly from something. But
I think everything comes from something. I think you'd be hard pressed to find anything that is truly original. I think we're all building off of things that we've learned or heard, or you know, especially with music, like, there's such a limited amount of notes, you know, there's only so much you can do. And you hear a song and it gets in your brain in some level, and maybe a year later, like, something similar comes to it. It's just like, it's very, sometimes I'll write a song and I'll bring it to the band, or I'll hear it later and I'm like, ah, fuck, it's that song. And it's not even conscious. Like, I'm not even doing it consciously, which is funny because now there are all sorts of lawsuits where it's like, no, this is my song. And maybe sometimes there's, you know, like, blatant kind of stealing, but I think it's kind of silly because fuck, everything, every song is every other song. It's sort of, you know, but it's all original. It's all like, it's maybe not like, it's all borrowed. Like, we're all borrowing from each other all of the time. We can't really have like a completely original thought because we're so influenced by everyone else around us, by everything else that we read or we hear. And I was really fascinated by that. Like, when I was younger, I had this sort of like afternoon of this awakening, of this kind of like, for the first time in my life, I really like opened my eyes and saw the world as it was. And I was just laughing. I was like, what the fuck are we doing? What are we doing here? Like, I was watching everyone drive around in their cars. I was like, why? Like, what? And it was just like beautiful. I could like really, really see everything like for what it was. And it dissipated pretty quickly, but it was pretty like, it really stuck with me, the like the potency of that. But I was just thinking like, what do I believe that's like truly me? And can I actually know that? But like, what do I believe that I've been conditioned to believe? And how do I unpack that? And what's useful and what's not useful? So it's all that. So, I mean, I got away with it, but
You gotta wait. Art's what you can get away with it. So yeah, Larissa, it was a bastard of a question, but you hit it. You nailed it. So, you know, where'd that leave us? one of the things I want you to convey to listeners, as you know, I encountered your music through a friend, and then, you know, we got some on YouTube and you're on Spotify. Larissa, can you tell the listeners right now, like, what what you're putting out, where to find you, where, you know, where to interact, whatever, you know, where do they find Larissa Birdseye?
I would love to plug my Spotify. So I've released an EP this year called Wildfire. I released a 2-track EP called The Hollowed Hall Sessions. And then I've been releasing singles pretty steadily. So I released Porcelain in May, and then I released Shame a couple days ago. I'll be releasing another single called Grow the Fuck Up, and then a single called Happy Now later in the fall. And those are my plans. So I've been working with a couple different really talented producers, Ryan Lewis, who's worked with Doja Cat in the past, and then James Villa, who I've worked on the last couple singles, who's so talented. He's young, and he's going to the top.
Yeah, you can tell. Yeah.
He's just great. He's lovely to work with. So follow me on Spotify. I'm doing a lot this year, and then I'm mostly active on my Instagram. I post a lot there. I think Facebook is becoming a little bit more irrelevant. I think we abused Facebook too much with political tirades last year, and I think we're very much finished.
I think abuse is the proper word in that sense.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm still on Facebook. I still update YouTube. I put out a lot of music videos. I'm actually putting out a pretty wild music video for Shame that I filmed with my friend Adam Sweeney of Adama Creative. So we built like we spent a full week building this. Like, we did it super, super DIY, picked up like a ton of brick and stone, and we built this kind of like old ruined temple, and like had platforms and a whole thing. We had torches, and basically shot like a ritual sort of sacrificial music video. People are going to be pretty upset if it's not satanic. It's the vibe of like a horror movie. So I'm putting that out in a couple weeks, and then I've got a lyric video coming for Shame, which I'm really really, really happy with. Just like a really, really cool concept. A bunch of stuff coming, honestly. I spent last year really kind of incubating, because I had to. We were usually I'm pretty slammed with playing shows, and I for the first time in like a couple years, I had time to really sit and write. And I wrote more than 100 songs and kind of pared it down to what I thought would be worth it to put out and kind of spend time with. So now I've been in a release cycle. I've been having a lot of fun. It's definitely a different side to it. It sort of feels a little relieving to not be as manically creative. And now I'm kind of like in the business side of things, which I think is healthy. It's all an ebb and flow. I think if I was like straight creative for a really long time, I think I would Vincent Van Gogh myself. I think it's too much.
Yeah. Oh, and I think, thanks for sharing that, because I want folks to connect, to your art. In I will say on the Shame, and I saw the visuals for it. I mentioned you maybe before we went on, you know, I love horror, and like, I just love all that aspect. So I was almost maniacally, I'd be like, where's the video for this? I know she has to like, plop out a video. So when you mentioned the video, I'm like, okay, now I'm waiting. So
yeah, it's coming. It's coming.
that's great to hear. Larissa, I'm just want to let you know, I've been very pleased to connect with you and learn about your art and your thinking and about how you create it, and for the songs on this episode that I know listeners will enjoy. Because of your productivity and the horror that is the pandemic, I know you have a lot of stuff coming out. So, you know, the benefits maybe from my side of, you know, getting that material, super appreciated. But I wanted to let you know, it's been a pleasure to meet you and hear about your thinking on art and philosophy. Yeah. And best of luck. You know, you mentioned it's like what you can get away with. I just want you to get away with as much as you need and want to.
Thank you so much, Ken. It's been a pleasure speaking with you as well.
Absolutely. And hopefully we'll have a chance to talk soon. Take care, Larissa.
Yeah. All right. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I'm so sick of watching everybody leave. I'm so tired of feeling this fucking empty. You say that you're sorry, but I don't think that you are. All you did was cut me open and deny that you left scars. I hate you. Like I promise not to. And the worst part is all of the time I spent playing pretend. I guess we were barely lovers, I guess we were barely friends. And I wish I had never met you in that bar. And I wish I had never asked you to be part of any of my. Because now I hate the sound of my voice when I am singing about how you tore me down. I hate you. Like I promised not to. And the worst part is all of the time I spent playing pretend. I guess we were barely lovers, I guess we were barely friends. And I wish I had never met you in the bar. And I wish I had never asked you to be part of any of my music. Cause I hate these melodies. You did to me. Yeah, I can't stop fucking singing about how you destroyed me. I hate you. How could you expect me not to? And the worst part is how much of me I gave you in the end. So I guess that we're not lovers. Someday when you see me and I'm happy and content, I hope to God you don't come near enough to ruin it. And now that it's all over, guess there's no need to pretend. We were barely lovers, honey, we